Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Roving with the Arts here on KSJE in Farmington, New Mexico, your cultural beacon for the Four Corners. My name is Mick Hess, and today, for my fifth episode of Local Favorites, my absolute favorite is Connie Schultz, and she's going to tell us about her experiences growing up and how in the world she ever got started on this instrument called a euphonium. And it'd probably be helpful to start off and tell people what a euphonium is for those who are unaware.
Well, a euphonium is, I get asked this a lot, and I always say it looks like a small tuba. It's half the size of a tuba.
A baby tuba.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then I go into the fact that the word euphonium isn't heard as often as the term baritone horn. And that's just kind of a little misnomer that has been created in the United States. American publishers and band directors have always called it a baritone because that's what's on the music. It's kind of an American baritone is a cross between a standard baritone, which is a little smaller instrument, and a euphonium. So everything just kind of is called a baritone, but technically I play the euphonium.
Well, you do it very well too. but now that begs the question, you started 47 years ago.
Yes, 47 years ago.
So how old do you think you were when you started? And you were pretty small as a person.
I mean,
and yet to haul around a baby tuba ain't so easy.
I have kind of a sweet story about that. The summer before fifth grade, so all you folks listening, go ahead and do the math. You'll figure out exactly how ancient I am. The summer before fifth grade was known as summer band for all the little beginners that wanted to play. And I had sat down at the breakfast table, and my dad asked me, well, what are you going to play? And I honestly had no idea. What I knew that I wasn't going to play was the alto sax, because we had had a saxophone in the basement.
Thank goodness. I never would have met you.
Exactly. About a year before this, I picked up the saxophone and had a couple beginner books and taught myself to play the alto sax. And I knew how to read music. I had taken piano lessons for a few years, so you know that part of it was easy for me. The sax was a piece of cake, in my opinion. I was kind of a little smart aleck kid. So I told my dad, I said, Dad, I don't know what I want to play. And he said, well, why don't you play? And he probably said baritone because you know, we didn't know the difference. And I said, well, okay, sure. I had no idea what it was. Hmm. Absolutely no idea. Hmm. Had no idea how enormous it was to a little fifth grader.
Yeah.
And Dad said, I think you really enjoy it. And I said, why? He said, because you'll get all the best parts in Sousa marches. I said, okay, sounds good to me. So there you have it. Showed up to the summer band. The band director looked at me and said, and what are you going to play? And I said, I'm going to play the baritone. He walked over to the closet, pulled one off the shelf, brought it to me. And I'm sure I kind of wanted to fall off my chair because I had no idea what he was getting into. There you have it.
You didn't tell him you wanted to play the counter melodies in Sousa marches, did you?
I didn't. But I do remember hauling this big old thing home, and I was walking, of course, three blocks, and I stopped at, I don't remember the name of the house, some people I knew, obviously, stopped at their house and asked if I could use their phone. I needed a ride home because this was way too heavy for me.
What a great story.
Anyway, I've been playing ever since.
Well,
absolutely love it.
That's great.
Yeah.
What's interesting in these conversations is finding out where people started this journey that we've all been on for a lot of years at this point. Well, Connie, I always ask everybody, what are some of their most memorable playing experiences? So what would you say tops your list?
Oh, there are so many. But mostly, I mean, as a middle-aged adult, I would say, Brassworks 4 tops the list.
Funny you should mention that.
Yeah. you know, our quartet, we've been everywhere, played so many concerts, different venues.
Let's hear Brass Works 4. What are we going to hear?
Yeah. This is an arrangement that I had done of Psalm 19 by Marcello.
Here we go. Brass Works 4, Psalm 19. Let the heavens declare. We just heard Connie's arrangement of Let the Heavens Declare, Psalm 19 by, who was it, did you say?
Marcello.
Marcello. You're listening, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to a program I'm calling Local Favorites, and I've asked people to come in and tell us what their favorites are. We know that they are our favorites, but I'm curious to know what are their favorites when it comes to music. And Connie wanted to mention something about an extension of Brass Works 4.
Yeah, Brass Works 4, like I had mentioned earlier, you know, we had so many different styles of concerts, and from the serious into all the shtick that we had done with our skits and whatnot. One of the most serious events that we did was we added two more members to form a sextet for a pretty early showcase concert. So that we could do Oscar Baum's Sextet in E-flat minor. Absolutely beautiful piece of music.
What a crazy key, E-flat minor.
Exactly.
Huh? Think how many flats are in the key signature.
Yeah, more than should
17
be.
17.
But this piece, I think this was the first beautiful piece of music that I played that really affected me emotionally. Mm. It just... There was something about that sound of six players.
Well, there's more depth. There's, there's more volume. We're going to hear now the Asbury Brass Quintet.
Yes.
And Adolf Herseth, who's considered the finest orchestral trumpet player the world has known, in Oscar Baum's, the first movement of Oscar Baum's Sextet in E-flat minor, right?
Yes.
Okay, here we go.
Thank you.
We just heard the first movement of Oscar Baim's sextet in E-flat minor that we have played several times, actually. It was a beautiful piece, just beautiful piece, and very romantic in several of the movements. That first one is just gorgeous.
Oh, it is.
Connie Schultz is with me in the studio today, telling us about her favorites. And so, Connie, you mentioned to me something about... to leave the flashy stuff to the trumpets. And we heard that at the end of this Oscar Baim piece. What do you mean by that?
Well, that's mostly when we were discussing solos. You know, you had asked what my favorite solo pieces are for euphonium. And, you know, there's not a lot of actual pieces written for euphonium solo that I've enjoyed playing. You know, most of them are transcriptions for other instruments. Right. Euphonium has only been around since, like, 1850. And then nothing was really written for the solo instrument itself until it was brought over to United States, basically. I mean, a lot of brass band stuff in England, whole different style of playing. And in the 1960s, 1970s, the literature started coming out. And a lot of it was the show-off flash and flare of theme and variations kind of stuff. And I don't enjoy those. I don't enjoy playing them. That's why I said, leave it for the trumpets. They can they can have the flash and the flare. I like the melodic, the beautiful, slow, lyrical playing that really shows off the sound of the euphonium. This is one of my favorites. Recording by Matt Trotman, playing Send in the Clowns. Beautiful arrangement, beautiful sound.
Maybe one of the most beautiful songs written.
Thank you.
We just heard one of the most incredibly beautiful melodies, Send in the Clowns, played on euphonium. Which, what is it that about this kind of music that really gets you?
Well, it just, it really demonstrates the beautiful sound, the rich, sonorous sound of the euphonium.
Euphonium means, isn't it?
Yeah, beautiful.
Beautiful sound.
Beautiful sound. So that's kind of why I like playing this type of music.
What's the next one in this beautiful sound mode?
Another one I really like is also played by Matt Trotman, Dance of the Blessed Spirits by Gluck. Absolutely gorgeous.
We just heard Dance of the Blessed Spirits by Gluck. He goes way back, doesn't he? That's a pretty old...
Way back.
Yeah, way back. If some of you out there know when Gluck was born, you can call it in. One of the other questions I ask everybody is some of the most famous or the pieces, orchestral or chamber music pieces, that really are like the top for each person. And you've chosen...
I chose... One of them was the opening of Mahler's Seventh Symphony. I mean, this really isn't scored for euphonium. It's scored for tenor horn, a tenor horn solo. But oftentimes it is played on the euphonium. You know, there's just not many orchestral pieces that include the euphonium.
Right. Pictures at an exhibition.
Yes. Yeah. Well, actually, no.
Oh, that's tuba.
Tuba, but again, it's so high for the tuba that a lot of times they'll pick up euphonium and play bidlow. The planets, Holst Planets, does include euphonium.
Right, right.
Well, sometimes on the score it says tenor horn. So it's, I mean, it's just, it's such a new instrument and it's not often heard in the orchestra. But Mahler's Seventh Symphony, the opening movement is just, it's
there. That's what we're going to hear. That's a relatively long excerpt. And I know you went to New York and heard this live, didn't you?
I did.
At Lincoln Center?
Yes.
Well, yeah, Lincoln.
Yes.
With New York Philharmonic, and that's actually the recording that we have here today. So we're going to hear the first movement of Mahler's Symphony No. 7 in E minor, by the way, if anybody's keeping track.
Thank you.
We just heard the first movement of Mahler's Mighty Symphony No. 7, and it starts out with what could be a euphonium solo, which is why one of the reasons Connie loves this piece.
Yes.
Give me another one, Connie, or give our audience another example.
Well, an example of a beautiful, beautiful chamber piece is Omanium Mysterium by Morten Lordson. This piece was written for voice, for choir, and I was first introduced back to this piece back in 2007 in a group that I play down in Santa Fe. It's a Concordia Santa Fe. It's a really, really fine wind ensemble, and that was our first concert. Omanium Mysterium was programmed for wind ensemble. Beautiful euphonium part, of course, and oh my gosh, it just, the dissonances, the resolve, everything about this piece was just incredible. So I started listening to a lot of Morten Lordson after that. Most of it was, you know, choir pieces, of course. I got back after that concert. I called Mick and I said, we're putting together a brass choir. We're going to do this piece. It would fit beautifully for brass. And I thought, if I can't find it written for brass, then I'll arrange it. Well, lo and behold, there's an arrangement for an 11-piece brass choir that was out there, got the music, and that was the first year that the Best Brass of Christmas. I had to stop and think what the name of our group is. That was the first year that Best Brass of Christmas was formed. And that piece then became the centerpiece for our annual event. Absolutely beautiful. Just incredible.
I want to mention, since you brought this piece up, one of my programs in December is going to be all Omanium Mysterium by many, many different arrangements. Trombones, cellos, wind ensemble, voices, and just a glorious piece. And so let's sit back. This is, however, with voices, right? This is... Is this one we're hearing?
No. This is the Canadian National Brass.
Here we go. If you're counting measures, measure 44 is where the tuba comes in. I remember that. We've done it so many times, and it really is like the climax of the piece.
It is.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Thank you.
Omanium Mysterium, the centerpiece of Best Brass of Christmas's concerts. We've done it for how many years now? 13?
That's the math. That's
unfortunately, it's not going to happen this year, but we're planning something else if we can. But an actually beautiful, beautiful piece originally written for, is it SATB? Four parts, or is it bigger?
And I'm sure they're split. I've never looked at the score for the vocal score.
It's interesting that a vocal piece works so absolutely perfectly for brass, isn't it? I mean, you can't imagine like flutes doing this. Or saxophones.
No, please tell me there's not a...
Oh, gosh. If you're just tuning in, I'm in the studio with Connie Schultz, euphonium player extraordinaire. And this program is titled Local Favorites, where I talk to our local favorite musicians, and they tell us what their favorites are. Every day I get to choose exactly what I want to put on the radio, so I thought it'd be nice. And Connie is number 5 so far in this group of probably 20 different musicians coming up, so it'll take us well into 2021. What's up next, Connie?
Well, another example of this beautiful lyrical sound is a piece by John Stevens titled Benediction. This recording is from a concert that I played in Santa Fe with the Concordia Santa Fe Wind Ensemble. I'm not sure which year we played this, but it's just another one of those beautiful lyrical pieces that to me really shows off what the euphonium can do, what it can sound like.
There's some slight similarities between the opening of this piece and Mahler 7 that also features a euphonium, or it could feature a euphonium. Anyway, this is a beautiful recording with Connie playing the opening solo of Benediction. We just heard Benediction featuring the Santa Fe group called Concordia Santa Fe, of which Connie is a member. Were you there from the very beginning? Were you on the very first concert?
I was.
And every,
yes.
Well, there was a couple that you missed.
I've missed a few, just scheduling issues, but right.
And that group primarily tries to play music, rather contemporary music, wouldn't you say? It's primarily that, And we just heard this beautiful piece, Benediction, with Connie. So, Connie, one of the other questions I ask, when you hear recordings, or if you happen to be live in a live audience, and you hear your instrument, do you listen critically, more critically to that than maybe the not your instrument parts?
Unfortunately, yes. I really wish I didn't listen critically. Sometimes I just want to listen to the euphonium or a brass ensemble featuring euphonium. I just want to listen and enjoy the music. But unfortunately, I do tend to listen critically. Yeah. And I don't know how I can get myself not to do that.
Well,
but
I mean,
I do.
Yeah. But just think how many hours you have spent playing your instrument over the years. I think it's pretty natural.
And it's, you know, when you say the word critically, it's not a negative thing. I mean, there's some good things and some bad things that I hear and listen, and sometimes I try to imitate a player, not anybody in particular, but it's just, it's hard not to listen. What I really tend to do is try to learn something about phrasing and intonation, or those types of things. Like Omanium, for example, I can't tell you how many different arrangements I've listened to of Omanium.
Yeah, me too.
But what I always come back to is tempos and phrasing, and things like that that we can do as our group, as Best Brass of Christmas, that we can do to improve upon our interpretation.
Yeah.
Or, if I like it or don't like it, what someone else is doing.
Well, that's the beauty of live music, though, isn't it? That you get a chance to do those kind of things.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm very critical of my own playing. Absolutely terribly. Oh, just terrible about that. But I think as artists, we all kind of tend to be our own worst critic.
I think so. So another question I've asked a lot of people is, what's their second favorite instrument? And for you, you probably would want to say cornet, but
no.
Then in that case, it would be your third.
No, Mick, sorry. It's not. My second favorite instrument is the cello. Yep, it's the cello.
You'll be happy to know that many people have called the cello and the euphonium their second favorite instrument.
Really?
There's something about that. Range. I think the range.
The range is the same. The euphonium has, I've heard this so many times, it's the cello of the band.
Yeah.
And somebody recently told me, I've always heard that the cello is the euphonium of the orchestra. And that just kind of made me feel really good. Mm. But I have always loved the cello ever since... A good friend of mine at Minot State, she did her senior recital. She was a cellist. And I heard her play, again, slow lyric piece. It was The Swan, of course, a real typical cello piece.
Yes.
And I just melted. And I've been drawn to the cello. And I told myself, when my kids are grown and I'm suffering from the empty nest, I am going to buy myself a cello and start studying. So I have. I've been playing for a year and a half, closing in on 2 years.
Great.
And I love it. It's really difficult, but I just sometimes I'll pick up my euphonium and play the pieces that I have for cello, and vice versa. Of course, I can't even come close to playing my euphonium music on the cello yet, but I'm getting there.
Well, we're getting sort of close to the end of the program today. Mm-hmm. And before we do that, I want to ask, and we don't have to go into any detail, but if you were stranded on a Pacific island, let's do the Pacific, what three pieces would you want to have with you, that the only ones you could hear from now to the end?
Oh, I think Mahler symphonies number 3, 5, and 7.
Man, I think I would choose the same one.
Everything is just tied right up into...
They really encompass everything,
they
those symphonies.
They really do. Yeah. Of course, I could throw in another couple Mahler symphonies, but you just asked for three, so I had to narrow it down.
Okay. We have a couple more selections to put on the program here. October, tell us what that's going to be about, Connie.
Well, I kind of included this piece into a favorite style of music that I like to perform and I like to listen to. After that year of being introduced to Morten Lordson, gosh, I've just listened to so much of his music, and I've also been drawn to the music of Eric Whitaker, another choral writer. It's that sound, it's the dissonances, it's the tension that gets created, and then the release you feel when those clashing chords resolve. It's just, I don't know, it's just something about the emotion that comes about, you know, from hearing that style of music. I listen to a lot of that.
It's interesting that Paul Barrow, who's a good friend of ours, who's not crazy about contemporary atonal, we can call it, music, because for the exact same reason that you like this, that it resolves.
Right.
And a lot of atonal music really doesn't have a chance to resolve unless they break the rules and become tonal.
Right. But you know, a lot of this music that I like to listen to, I mean, I call them dissonances, but it's not, you know, it's not quite as crazy as a lot of the contemporary music that's out there now. It's just... kind of goes a place that you don't expect.
Right.
And it goes there, it holds on for just a little bit, and then when it resolves, I just feel this release. It's just, it's incredible. This piece that we're going to play next, it's by Eric Whitaker, and this is another piece that I was able to perform with Concordia, not this recording that we're going to hear, but just the piece itself. This is October from Live from Tokyo.
October is a great month when you think about it.
You know, it is.
All right, here we go.
It is. Listen to the euphonium. About 2.5 minutes in, there's an incredible solo.
Okay. Thank you. We just heard Eric Whitaker conducting his own piece called
October.
We have just a minute now. I'm going to ask Connie how the pandemic has affected her life, and then we'll have a chance for one more final piece.
Well, I tell you, the pandemic has pretty much put a stop to my euphonium playing, but it gave me a lot of time to work on my cello, my second favorite instrument. It's a dark place for musicians, all artists, actually. It's just not the opportunity to get together and play with each other. It's been tough. What's really difficult for me is not being able to have Best Brass of Christmas and playing O Monume this year.
Mm.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
Well, we might announce a surprise sooner rather than later. Okay, we're going to finish the program with a brass chorale from Mahler's Symphony No. 2. And there's just something for both of us that it's very, very strong emotions when we hear this kind of brass playing, I would say. So I want to thank Connie for coming in and being a part of Local Favorites. And we're going to end the program with Mahler. Thanks for joining me today, folks. I had Connie Schultz here in the studio, one of our local favorites, and we ended with the brass chorale from Symphony No. 2 by Gustav Mahler. You've been listening to KSJE here in Farmington, New Mexico.